This is Meet the Composer.
The first time I encountered the music of Donacha Dennehy, I was sight-reading the viola part of a new theater piece about Ireland's great famine called The Hunger. I had a bunch of music to learn for that session, and a cursory glance at my part had shown a long string of repeating eighth notes that seemed pretty simple. So the first rehearsal comes, the conductor gives a downbeat, and wham, my part starts whizzing by at a blistering pace. Crazy to reach string harmonics are around every turn, and the meter is in constant flux. I learned a couple things that day. Number one, this composer not only writes rad music, his scores are so well written and so clear that they look deceptively simple. And number two, I really need to start preparing more thoroughly for first rehearsals. From New York Public Radio's Q2 Music, this is Meet the Composer, the show that takes a deep look into the minds of contemporary classical composers. Today on our show, composer Donacha Dennehy.
I'm Donacha Dennehy.
Donacha has been praised by The Wire for inhabiting a sound world all his own. He's received commissions from basically a laundry list of amazing people, including Don Upshaw, Icebreaker, the Percussion Group of The Hague, the San Francisco Contemporary Music Players, Kronos Quartet, among many, many others. Today on the program, we're tracing the evolution of Donacha's music. From his childhood, recording 25-minute long recorder sonatas into a tape recorder, through the epic work we're hearing a bit of right now, Gra Augustbach's. Donacha's music has a way of combining the physics of resonance with a keen sense of poetry, and recombining old instruments in creative, surprising ways. A little while back, Donacha joined us in the Q2 Music Studio to talk to us about how he got his start. Donacha, thank you for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you, Nadia.
So where did this obsession with music and resonance and sound come from? What was your childhood like? How did you first become interested in music?
I would say that mine is not the standard childhood for someone who's involved in so-called classical music, in that my parents were not musicians at all. In fact, they hate me saying this, but it's true. We didn't have a record player in the house. We'd radios, so it's not like we had no technology and TV. So I became interested in music. I started at school, tin whistle and recorder and things like that, and really came obsessed with it very, very fast. They bought a record player then. My father was, you know, very excited, and a piano or whatever. And he was a writer, a radio player. That kind of inspired me to instantly start composing. So I was 9, really, so it's quite late. And so I would write these like 25-minute recorder sonatas. And
I am dying. I wish you had a recording of this 25.
I do.
Do you really?
Yes, they're on cassettes at home. I used to play them into a cassette player and then transcribe them. And so I wrote a whole load of compositions, started instantly. And so I started then the flute and then taking composition classes with this guy, a wild character called William York. He was from England, and he had set up the Dublin Sinfonia. And then I think there had been some scandal about how it was organized, so he had to leave the country in a hurry. But that was an awful loss to me, because he was so inspiring. I used to love my lessons with him. And he'd introduced me to Stockhausen and everything. So I went to see Stockhausen when I was 10. And it was a massive education. So, I mean, my tastes were fairly clear almost early on, because I liked the energy of stuff like the Brandenburg concertos as well. And then, you know, Irish traditional music as well, which I used to play. And I sort of never stopped. I mean, I kind of thought I was going to be a composer from after 2 weeks of music lessons. And I never really veered from that career path. I never had much doubt. It's kind of weird.
So So for me, one of the real hallmarks of your music is your use of the harmonic series. Do you think you could explain a little bit about what the harmonic series is?
Wow, that's a tall order. Thank you. Yeah. If you think of any sound that we hear, let's say an A that the orchestra tunes to A440. Let's say you play that A on a piano. So let's say it's a piano concerto, so they have to tune to the piano. That A isn't just that pitch. What 440 means is that it vibrates at 440 times per second. That actually produces the A sound.
And we can have a computer make that perfect sine wave 440. Which
absolutely.
Is the most pure version of a pitch. Right?
Exactly, yeah. Whereas when you play it on a piano or a clarinet or an oboe, you're getting all these overtones as well. In fact, that's what defines the timbre. So you get all these upper overtones that are produced, and they, as it were, give that A its particular type of sound. Every naturally occurring sound that you hear as a pitch has higher overtones. And so you can actually analyze this these days since computers. And that's what the spectral composers did. They analyzed individual notes like an A in a trombone or an E or whatever, and looked at the way that spectrum developed and then orchestrated it, the spectrum of those overtones.
What sort of drew you to the harmonic series and to that style of writing?
Yeah, I had been interested in the harmonic series for a while. When I was a grad student at the University of Illinois, I remember this presentation given by this musicologist called Lev Kobliakov on new trends in European music, whatever. And he played this piece by Gérard Griset called Modulation. And I thought, wow, I hadn't heard anything like this. This really knocked me. And so from that moment on, I became really interested in what could be done musically using the overtone series, and also became really interested in people like Lamont Young. And the stuff coming out of the American experimental tradition, James Tenney, what he was doing with overtone series. And it just seemed to make real sense for me in terms of being able to create these amazing pitch timbre combinations.
This is pianist Lisa Moore performing Donica's Stainless Staining for piano and electronics, a piece that uses this spectralish concept of orchestrating overtones in combination with this relentless, almost reckless energy.
This is almost, in a way, exactly what we're talking about, kind of a rhythmic use of material that's derived from the overtone series. So you have this piano, which is playing in equal temperament, although often choosing notes that are within, let's say, a spectrum of overtones, and then accompanied by all these detuned pianos on soundtrack. And it's hell for leather, really. It doesn't relent, this piece.
When you say detuned pianos, how are they tuned differently?
Yeah, actually, in a way, detuned is maybe a bit of a misnomer. They're retuned so that they all produce pitches within a massive overtone series based on a G-sharp. And that G-sharp actually doesn't even exist in the piano because it's lower. I imagine a G-sharp is quite lower, so I can get 100 overtones. I have 7 pianos on tape which are retuned to give all these notes within that overtone series against Lisa playing live.
Live piano with these retuned pianos are just so effective. It seems like you're pretty comfortable manipulating electronics or using that as a tool in your music.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in a way, I started off as an acoustic composer, but then I did a lot of electronic music when I was a grad student in Illinois. And then in the early days of Crash, a lot of the pieces were involving electronics and instruments and video electronic and instruments.
Let's turn to a piece that you wrote, which actually doesn't incorporate any electronics at all. However, when I listen to it, that's actually kind of a surprise. In other words, the sonorities that you're creating in this what's essentially a really old form, which is the piano trio,
yeah,
sound completely modern and totally futzed with. The piece I'm talking about is Bulb. How did you write this piece, or what is the electronic sounding element that I'm hearing?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, sometimes when I hear this live, I keep on getting shocked, even though it's my piece. I go, where's the electronic transformation, or is that being amplified now? And it's not. It's the way the overtones interact with each other in this world. And I actually think, you know, I did deliberately set out to write a piano trio that was almost like a wall of sound piano trio, because the idea of a piano trio, you think of this quite nice music where the melody is exchanged between the cello and the violin, and then the piano shouldn't dominate too much, and you know, nice Sunday tea with cucumber sandwiches, and I mean, not that there are great masterpieces of the piano trio.
And repertoire. Cucumber sandwiches are delicious.
They are really delicious. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Do you cut the crusts?
Of course. How else would you have a cucumber?
Well,
sandwich?
See, I'm Irish, not English, so we wouldn't. We would leave the crust on.
No,
you can have high tea at the Shelburne, where you don't cut the crusts, actually.
But low tea sort of has the
has the crusts. So anyway, with I mean, you've hit on something that's kind of important to me. I often think of Ligeti's Atmosphere as a really important piece, because that started off as a piece that he was writing in the studios in Cologne. And he found that the technology was too cumbersome to realize it. So he realized it using an orchestra. And electronic sound had influenced the way he approached writing for the orchestra. And that's definitely the case in me.
I love that because especially sort of in my childhood, when we were talking about electronic music, it was often electronics trying to imitate, poorly sort of, trying to imitate acoustic instruments.
Yeah.
Right? So you had kind of early General MIDI soundtracks with, you know, fake trumpets and whatnot. And everyone was like, that's so god-awful. So I love this approach, which you're saying Ligeti took and you as well, where you're inspired by things that can be or were first achieved electronically to write basically in a new idiom for these very, very old instruments.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense that as a composer, you should try as much as you possibly can, and being true to yourself, to try and create something new in some sort of way, you know? And that sounds very grand, but I think it's a, you know, it's a noble enough intention. You know? Stuff that I do, I often think of my pieces for instruments and retuned instruments as being also kind of pieces in themselves, and also etudes for my thinking about how I would write just normal acoustic music. And I'm really influenced by things I've done with electronics and trying to recreate that just in the acoustic realm. And that's a big thing in Bulb, that I wanted to write, have these sonorities where you heard these pulsing sonorities, which you can't imagine these three instruments producing that sound, and yet you can if you pick these pitches.
Let's listen for a couple minutes as Donica stacks seemingly more and more voices into these thick, overstuffed textures. It's easy to forget there's only ever three people making this sound.
Mm-hmm.
Bulb or any other piece from today's program, you can go to q2music.org. When we get back, we'll hear about eccentric European modernists, gender confusion, and Irish culture. Stay tuned.